Hey, Connor.
Hey, Dylan.
I am ready to tell you all about the awesome online platform called Broadway Plus.
We love.
You've obviously heard of it. They're the leading industry experts at connecting you with your favorite Broadway stars through amazing virtual experiences like meet and greets, concerts, and coaching. Can I say more?
You can say, I'll take over from here.
Great.
Because there's lots of fun to share. You remember Taylor Lautner?
Of course.
Jordan Luke Gage.
Duh.
The Kara Lindsay.
Are you kidding?
And more. Okay, and more, right? The and more are drama alums and your favorite Broadway stars and West End stars who are hosting weekly workshops and Q&As for Broadway Plus. And these experiences start at only $15. That's approximately what I spend at Starbucks every day.
Right.
What am I getting there?
We'll talk about it later.
Okay.
But listen, everyone can check out these upcoming workshops and events at broadwayplus.com/workshops. And of course, in the episode notes below, we can't wait to see you there.
Drama.
Drama.
Press play.
Curtain up and now we're in.
It's time to take spin.
The shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama. Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey. Say no more.
Drama.
Drama.
Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life
in New York City
and
the world. I'm Connor McDowell.
And I'm Dylan McDowell. Connor, it's a big frickin' day.
For many reasons. The big one we'll obviously get to soon because that's why people are listening.
Yes.
But for the first time in what feels like a year, there's actual Broadway news. There's a show that has tickets on sale.
Yes, and a date that it's going to return.
Can you believe?
December.
And I have three words to say to you.
Okay.
Meghan Markle's impact. That is because Diana, a new Broadway musical, has announced it's going to be opening on Broadway in December. And tickets are on sale.
If only they could have had tickets on sale the morning after the Oprah interview.
Oh, my God. That would have been a gag.
I know. That was a while ago, though. Yeah, it's insane. It's exciting. And they also announced that they're going to be doing releasing their Netflix, like, pro shoot.
Right, which is interesting. Okay, so this is a brand new musical. No one's ever seen it before. Do you think that people watching it on Netflix 2 months before will inspire them to want to go see it in person? I mean, I know the producers think that's the trick.
I do, because remember when Legally Blonde was on MTV when we were in seventh grade or eighth grade? And we were like, well, now we have to go see it live.
That is true. Remember the girls from the Hills were like, you loved it here, now you've got to see it live.
I do remember that.
Lauren Conrad.
Mm-hmm. You know, actually, there's a back when Phantom of the Opera was coming out with its movie, the Broadway show was thought to be on its last legs. And so that's why they finally let the movie happen. And what actually then was this reverse effect where the movie inspired massive ticket sales. So
interesting.
I think that it could be that. I mean, you know, we have fans on, we're part of fandoms and whatnot that will watch bootlegs online, and it's sort of become less taboo to talk about it in the pandemic, but without the presence of live theater, that bootlegs only make you want to see it live. Like, you'll say, oh, have you seen Bridges of Madison County? Well, no, but I saw it on YouTube, but I just really want to see it live. You know, like that would be like the thought process.
You're making a great point. I feel like, yeah, you're right. Also, though, I have to say the ticket prices are the same as they were pre-pandemic.
Oh, I didn't realize.
All this talk about, you know, people were hoping there would be more accessibility. I mean, it's expensive. The tickets are expensive.
Mm.
I don't know. We'll see.
I don't like that. Well, maybe they'll adjust as it goes on. You know, shows will sometimes secretly lower the prices without any warning.
Very true. And also, if you have a Netflix subscription, you can watch it for, well, Netflix's price is bumped too. It's just, it's a whole thing. But anyway, I'm so excited. Literal Broadway news on a podcast
that's, I know,
a lot about theater.
And now we have to bring in our guests because I don't want to waste a second of their time.
No, no.
Connor, can you believe this is happening?
I can't. Let's do it, Dylan.
Okay. Our guest today became a household name in 2002 as he was the runner-up in the premiere season of American Idol. What came next has been nearly two decades of being a singer, musician, actor, host, and record producer. You know him as the host of Idol Rap and Idol Tonight, along with live events for the TV Guide Network, the Oscars, the Emmys, and the Grammys. He continues to reprise his role as the lovable Lil Sweet in commercials for Diet Dr. Pepper. Our guest starred in the cult classic from Justin to Kelly, as well as appeared on Broadway in productions of American Idiot, Romeo and Juliet, Wicked as Fiero, and Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, and of course, In Transit. His performance credits, contributions to the stage and music industry are too vast to list. He is a humanitarian and founded the Warrior Artist Alliance and most recently, the Core Confidence Challenge. He is the author of Audition Secrets and Unshakable Confidence, CEO of Profit Under Pressure, is a husband, a father, and an American Idol now and forever. Please welcome to drama, Justin
Guarini.
That was the greatest introduction ever. Do we need to have an interview now? I mean, that's pretty much it. That's all the juice.
We need to talk about From Justin to Kelly. Don't go anywhere. Do not go anywhere, Justin.
Done.
I'm so happy that you're on our podcast today.
I'm so excited to be here. You guys, that was a wonderful introduction, and we have so much drama to talk about. I can't wait.
Oh my God.
I can't believe you just did that. That is our favorite thing when guests say drama after we have. Thank you, Justin.
It's a gag.
Pleasure.
We can wrap up now. We can.
Good. Thank you. It was a pleasure being here. Thanks,
oh my
everybody.
God. Justin, are you well?
I am well, actually. I feel slightly mentally unwell. And well at the same time, you know, as and I really love being transparent about kind of what mm-hmm. the struggles that I am faced with in life, because, you know, obviously globally we have a huge struggle going on in the process of recovering from the pandemic. And I was forced, as many of us were, to make a pivot. Right. I happen to make very good money, but I also happen to spend very good money. And so, and I'm also transparent about that. And so when Broadway got shut down, pretty much all my other entertainment things got shut down as well. It just happened, whether it was Broadway or television, the commercial work that I was doing. And so I was faced with a choice. Either I'm just going to twiddle my thumbs, or I'm going to pivot and find out how what I do can serve a different audience or can serve the audience I already serve in a different way. And so that has been the blessing and the curse of this past, I don't know, 12 to 14 months.
Yeah.
And really just figuring out, okay, how can I maintain my sanity while being a father of three children, three dogs, and not traveling like I love to travel and not having the things that I love to do, and yet at the same time generate revenue that will help support my family,
right,
and also support my desire to be an artist and express myself.
Wow.
That's incredible. And of course, you're talking about your new book that's coming out.
Yeah, yeah. No, so I actually started writing this book last month. So it took about a year to figure out kind of where exactly I was going and what I wanted to do. But the book is called Unshakable Confidence. And you're like, well, wait a minute. Why would you write a book called Unshakable Confidence? And what it boils down to is basically over the years when people have asked me whether they were artists or entrepreneurs or influencers, asked me for advice, right? I just kind of kept a little running catalog in my head. And of all the questions, the foundation of all of them, the story behind the story, as we like to say, the subtext, right, in our mm-hmm. business, is, you know, confidence. It was always, I don't feel like I'm not good enough, or am I enough, or all these disempowering thoughts and questions. And really what it came down to was confidence. And so I started studying what confidence is, what makes it, what breaks it, and how to break it and how to build it. And what I discovered really is confidence is something that most people think that you're born with, that you either have it or you don't have it, or you have to have some sort of set of circumstances like a certain amount of money or awards or experience even to generate and have confidence. But really at the end of the day, it's a skill. Just like riding a bike, just like singing a musical number, just like, you know, learning lines 5 minutes before you have to go into the audition room, right? It's a skill. And at the end of the day, confidence is, if we break it down, the root word of confidence is to confide. And what does confide mean? It means to trust, right? That's why you tell your secrets to a confidant, right? Someone you confide in. So what I love to tell my students is that, and if you listening hear nothing else from what I say in this podcast, please hear this. When you understand that everyone in the world sees you not through their eyes, but through your eyes, you will understand that when you don't have confidence, aka trust in yourself, you'll understand that when you don't have that confidence, you're literally telling everyone you meet that they can't trust you. Mm. I'm gonna say that again. When you understand that everyone you meet sees you through your eyes, not their eyes, you'll understand that when you don't have confidence, you are literally telling everyone you meet that they can't trust you. And that then extends into, right, the audition room. That extends into what you're doing on the stage. That extends into, I don't know, if you're just trying to find a job and you're doing an interview and a job. That extends into your relationships, right? If you don't trust yourself, you're literally telling a person you're trying to have an intimate relationship with, you can't trust me. You make bad food decisions. You make bad fitness decisions because you don't trust yourself. You make bad money decisions because you don't trust yourself with the money. And when you do get it and you hear about the right thing to do with your money, you don't trust that that right thing is even going to work. Mm. And so that's why confidence is so important to me, because it's such a root foundational element of, especially in the circumstance that we're talking about in drama and theater and self-expression and artistry, that is so vital to success. And everything that you want, in my opinion, my humble opinion, everything that you want is standing just on the other side of your willingness to truly become confident, aka trust in yourself.
Wow, Justin, that's so incredible. I feel like I'm at a TED Talk. Also, you know, I've always wondered sort of the difference between confidence and cockiness. And I think you really just outlined the difference there just by defining confidence in such a strong way.
Sure.
You know, and I'm just curious, where did you learn this? Like, where was your confidence learned from?
You know what? It part of it is trial and error, like you learn anything, right? And the other part was actually studying it, right? Competence, the knowing of a thing. And so my confidence came from being skyrocketed onto a show in front of 30 million people on live television week in and week out. And really truly believing, as only a 22-year-old inexperienced person can believe, that when you do good work, they, those people upon high, will take care of you, right? Not the way it works in most businesses, certainly not in our business, the entertainment business. And so I had to be given so much and then have it snatched away and also myself burn it to the ground to really truly understand what trusting myself meant, aka confidence meant. And so I spent a lot of time being not confident. I spent a lot of time loathing myself. I spent a lot of time treating myself in a way that was unkind, and then reaping the results of that in terms of depression, in terms of crappy relationships, in terms of just horrible spending habits in order to try and, you know, make it seem like everything was okay. You know, I was a millionaire at age 22. Right. And I can't even tell you how quickly I went through that because I didn't trust myself. Mm. And, you know, I'm happy now. I'm paid well to do what I do now. It really just came down to learning how to trust myself and trial and error. And then you go to the other side of it where it's really, you just study it. You study a thing and I look and I see, you said confidence and versus cockiness, right? Well, confidence again is that trusting in yourself. It's that quiet belief in your own self-worth. Cockiness or bravado, if you don't like that word, on the other hand, is that action or those words that intend to impress or intimidate someone, right? So confidence is this quiet, attractive energy. The reason why you can be on the phone or Zoom with your best friend and look up and all of a sudden it's 2 hours have gone by is because there's two confident people who believe in their own self-worth, who don't need to prove anything and who are enjoying the exchange of energy between the two of them. Whereas if you get on the phone or you watch somebody on TV in the media or wherever it is who's cocky, who's trying to impress you or intimidate them, it is a repellent mm-hmm. energy, right? You want to get away from that person. You don't want to be on the phone with that person. You don't want to Zoom with that person. And so that's a major difference, right? So much we see people in the media, you know, we see people in our entertainment sphere who are very cocky, who impress and who intimidate. And unfortunately, so many people confuse that with cockiness and try and role model or behave the same way as those cocky people they see. And what they don't realize is that they are repelling the kind of people that they want in their life.
Wow. Wow. This is fascinating. I'm going to buy the book.
Cheers, it's coming out. Yeah, if you want to get the book, all you have to do is go to coreconfidencecoaching.com, and I am giving the ebook away for free. So get it while you can get it. Yeah, you just coreconfidencecoaching.com. I'm giving the ebook away for free because it's that important to me. And there's other offers I'll make down the line, right? But it's important for me to make sure that I get this information into people's hands because it's so important.
That's awesome.
Oh my God. That's amazing. And I think it's going to be an invaluable resource to so many people, especially, you know, you have so many fans of, you know, you've been around for different phases of your career. You know, you had Idol.
I've been around. That's it. I've been around. That's a great way of putting it. Right.
And then, of course, you know, Broadway brings in different fans all the time. You were in The Machine That Is Wicked and different new musicals you were about to do Once Upon a One More Time. So, which I hope still happens.
I think it will, because Britney is forever in everyone's thoughts and minds and hearts even now, you know? She's just as relevant now as she was 20 years ago.
Even more so, maybe, well, not more so, but maybe almost just as much because of the documentary and everything. Mm-hmm. We're really getting getting the 2000 feels of, ooh, paparazzi and the peek into the life and the drama and the challenges of Britney Spears. And I will say this about the musical, like Diana, as you said, is coming back, hopefully in December, right? Fingers crossed. And I do believe that, you know, once we get into the first quarter, at least of next year, we're going to see a lot more opening up in terms of the Broadway space. And I hope that Once Upon a One More Time has its triumphant return.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is an amazing musical that has obviously amazing music by Britney, but it has an original story that has nothing to do with Britney's life, but yet is extremely inspiring and is based on many of the fairy tale characters that we know and love. And so, fingers crossed, I can't even begin to tell you how awesome this show is, and I cannot wait for you to see it.
And the cast is amazing. I mean, it's Emily Skinner, it's friends of the pod, Ali Trim, and Aisha Jackson, like great people.
Yes.
I'm forgetting
great people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I can't wait.
Did you ever meet Britney?
Yes. Yes, a couple of times, actually. And she's extremely lovely. I was down, you know, speaking of from Justin and Kelly, I was shooting down there, and she was in town. She might have been on tour or something like that. And what's really interesting is if you go back and you look at the cast of From Justin to Kelly, many of the dancers were at the time like the kids who went out with Janet, went out with Britney, went out with Christina Aguilera. Like they were the crew, right? And so Britney was down there doing something in Miami, and I was doing an interview, and we were in the same hotel, and I'll never forget, my management rep went over and somehow like knocked on the door of Britney's room or some got in touch with somebody, and she was like, hey, Justin would love to say hi to Britney. And her manager or rep was like, Justin who?
Oh, yeah.
I agree, Justin who? Because I think there was still a little bit of drama going on there.
Yeah.
And she was like, Justin Guarini. He's like, oh, okay, yeah, sure, come on in. And so, when we met, she's absolutely lovely. She is as beautiful and kind and everything you would ever hope she would be in person.
I love that.
That's incredible. Now, does she have anything to do with Once Upon a One More Time? I know she saw a reading of it, I want to say.
Yeah, she did come to one of the stage readings that we had. I mean, it's her music and it's her catalog. And so whatever the legalese around that, she does have something to do with it.
Okay.
She is involved, not directly, like she's not showing up, but she certainly is involved and certainly aware of the production has come to see it. And was really, really just, she loved it when she did come to see it. But it's just crazy.
Gosh.
Like Britney Spears is still Britney Spears, right? Like we all were up on the stage and we were ready and like the building got shut down, right? Like you can't, nobody in and out, and Britney comes in and it's just like everyone's seated and everyone in the audience is aware that there's a special guest here, but the lights go down and then Britney comes in and then all of that, and then before the lights go up, Britney gets up and goes out, and then everybody, so it's a, you know, she's very well and deservedly so protected.
Yeah,
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I'm sure you've had so many incredible celebrity encounters over the years. I mean, just being on Idol in general, but you mentioned From Justin to Kelly, and I'm going to take that moment now to talk about it. Justin, I know that it has this crazy legacy, but to so many, it is one of the greatest movie musicals of all time.
How many? Wait, how to so many? Listen, so many, listen, my fanny.
I'm suddenly forgetting, but let me tell you. It was so iconic, and we, of course, wore that VHS out. We would get home from school and immediately put it on and do Wish Upon a Star and Anytime, every number around our very living room that I'm in now.
Anytime is legendary.
There's a legendary story behind that, too. You want to talk about some drama?
So, okay, listen. So this was the you and Kelly Clarkson. You know, we're using her first name. She's a first name now.
Oh, yeah.
And this was part of your contract that you had to do the movie? Is that how this all came to be?
Yes. Okay. And actually popped up in the media recently. I'll get Google alerts. And obviously Kelly has voiced her negative opinion of the movie. And that's great. I support that. I don't think she ever wanted to do it in the first place because it's just not where she came from, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas me, I was like, do a movie musical? Right. Yes, of course. Where do I sign? And so like I was into it. And so, you know, the movie itself was a dream come true for me. It was unfortunately not well received. I think when you have success like you have on American Idol, where you come and you are the number one show on television in the nation, you are kicking the living crap out of pretty much anything else that's on the television. They're going to come for you, right? And I will not say I was the best actor at the time. Neither was Kelly, but we were supported by some pretty great actors who have gone on, and Ikenoni Rose, obviously, Rose, being one of them, and Brian Dietzen. Like, there's some great folks, right? And yet, it was truly an experience. I loved it, and I'm proud of it. And it's stories like the two of you have that people have come up to me and be like, hey, this was so much fun. And the reason why it touches me is because I know that as a kid, when I was in like fourth or fifth grade, they wheeled in the AV cart one day after school with the TV strapped to the thing literally popped in this VHS for kids. Kids, that was a tape, a huge tape that you put into a box and it played videos. And they put on what is now and forever will be my favorite musical, West Side Story. I had never seen it before. And I was just like, ba-da-da-da-da. Like I was blown away. Like it was it. From that moment on, I was like, that's what I want to do. You want to talk about, I'm going to jump you here. I'm going to talk about it. I'm just going to go right for it.
This has been the most seamless transition to the Ring of Keys moment in the history of drama. But would you say that was your moment?
That was my Ring of Keys moment for theater, for sure. You know, I was little Allison, right? I think Allison is the character.
That's
name.
Right.
I was like, and by the way, I was one of the people who got to see that original production, and it was everything you could ever possibly hope for. I loved it. And the Ring of Keys moment to watch that sweet young lady delivered that song in a way that was so undeniable. It's just like, you know, I didn't need my faith restored, but if I'd needed my faith restored in our business and the power it has, especially for our young folks, then that moment was it. And it is that moment, my Ring of Keys moment, when I saw the beautiful Jerome Robbins choreography and everything that Bernstein and Sondheim did, and just, oh man, it was everything I never knew I wanted. And I literally remember walking out of the school, because there was a program called the Latchkey Kid Program. back when I was a child, they let children stay home at any age. And if you remember E.T., I was love E.T., right? That movie, E.T. Like, Drew Barrymore was like 2.5. And they're like, okay, honey, we're going to run out to the store. You just do something. And like 2.5-year-old Drew Barrymore was like, okay, yeah, sure. She's probably like 3. But like still, like, you're like, oh my God. And so there was a time when children were just allowed to come home, and instead of sitting on the couch, there was this after-school program, and that was where they wheeled in this movie musical. And I will never forget, after watching the whole thing and just being so taken by the story, which I would later come to understand was Romeo and Juliet.
Yes.
I walked out of the school and there was this long pavement sort of driveway that then led to the places where the cars pulled up and got you. And the entire way, I was doing probably the worst impersonation of the Jerome Robbins choreography and fly and like, and, you know, dancing like a jet and dancing like a shark. And it probably looked so terrible. But as I think back on it now, the visual in my mind and the feeling that I get is I felt like I could fly. I felt like I could fly. I felt like I was just transported to another world. And that was truly my Ring of Keys moment. And that, funny enough, when I let that voice that tells me I'm not good enough, that voice that's like, oh my goodness, this audience is, when I let all that go on stage, I still feel that feeling that I felt in my Ring of Keys moment whenever I perform.
Ah, chills. That's incredible.
I love that so much. So much. Uh-huh. And then, of course, from Justin to Kelly was probably someone else's Ring of Keys moment.
I can't believe it. I can't believe it. But that's the thing. That's the power of what it is that we do. I mean, it's insane. Like, you don't know. And whenever I'm like, because look, you guys know, it's a, this job, whether we're in film or television or theater, it's a job like any other job. Some days you show up and it has not been a fun day for you and your life. And you're just like, oh, I have to say the same lines over and over again that I've, if I'm lucky to have been able to say them for hundreds of times. But like, you know what I mean? Like, I would say it over again, like, I'm a little tired today. And every time I feel that, I think of exactly what you're talking about, that Ring of Keys moment. I think, oh my goodness, you idiot. A, if I'm on Broadway, I'm at the pinnacle of world theater, you idiot. Like, hello. And then there is someone out in that audience who is seeing their first Broadway show today. And there's someone out in that audience who, maybe based on what I do, or maybe based on the energy that I bring that allows someone else on the stage to, like, you know all boats rise together, right? Like, they're going to look and they're going to be like, I want to do that.
Yes.
And how dare I not go out and give 110%, because I would be denying the legacy of what it is that we do if I did that. I would be denying someone the possibility to say, yes, I want to do that. And maybe it's not be up on the stage, but maybe it's write something. Maybe it's play piano so that they can write music like that. Maybe it's just like, I want to stage manage. I want to do something. I want to be involved, right? And it's one more brick in the beautiful pathway, the yellow brick road, the beautiful pathway that, you know, it keeps theater, which has been a dying art for 4,000 years, right? Like, it keeps theater going. And so that is why those Ring of Keys moments are so important. And that's why, even though I joke around, I would be so proud if From Justin to Kelly was that something for someone, because that's the legacy that I hope that we all leave behind every single time that we step on the stage.
That's very beautifully put. Now, what's the drama behind Anytime?
Well, I will say this. There was some friction happening. There's a wonderful producer named Anders Bega, who is like one of the Swedish kings of, like, you know, you have Max Martin, who, speaking of Britney Spears, like, was so instrumental in all of those 2000s hits. And still, I mean, look, Adele, like, these Max Martin is Max Martin, right? And forever will be. Anders Bega is like a contemporary of Max's in Sweden. And so he wrote this song and produced this song called Anytime. And so I remember that when we were in the studio, it was Kelly's turn to record first. And so I went up, and the studio was like a super fly studio. It had like almost a little apartment above it. And I was in there, and there was television, and there's like a bed, and there's like all these things. That, and so an hour goes by, 2 hours go by, and I'm like, all right, cool, great. You know, then 3 hours goes by, and I'm like, what is going on? Like, we're just, are we, is something wrong? I haven't heard anything from anyone. 4 hours goes by. I'm like, right. 5 hours go. And I'm like, okay, is there something wrong? And then all of a sudden somebody comes up and they come and they get me. And I go down and I do my recording with Anders. And we're talking, and I'm just like, it didn't occur to me to ask, like, what had happened. And so it wasn't until years later that I found out that because there was some friction going on, Anders had gotten in his limousine, his car, and was headed, the producer was headed to the airport to go back to Sweden. Because what? He was like, I don't want to do this anymore. He's gone. And so Anytime almost wasn't produced because of some friction during the process. And so he was literally in the car on the way to the airport, was convinced to come back, and then came back and did the session with me. And, you know, to his credit, he was very cool. I didn't know anything about this. I've since have gone to, oh, and you know what? Maybe that's, he told me that. So about 6 years ago, I went over to Sweden to work and record with him on an album that I did. And he recounted that story to me. And I was like, are you kidding me? I had no idea. Almost like, right. Like 15 years later, I find out that Anytime almost didn't get made. And yet it's one of the greatest songs in from Justin Akeley.
Oh, the emotional centerpiece of the film.
Yes. You know what's really funny about that? Akeley was super smart. If you go back and look at the movie, speaking of Anytime, she was super smart because she went into the ADR sessions and whatever afterwards, and she was like, hey, play that music. And the director kind of wanted it to not seem like we were just the flipping on a track and singing, because it was so obvious to tell the audio difference between just, you know, wild audio or whatever, lobbed audio, and the highly produced, polished music. And so what he was like, I just want you to start singing it in real life, and then we'll go into the music. And so if you look, Akeley was like, hell no, you're going to flip it on or else I'm not doing it. And so every single time Akeley starts singing, it will go directly into the track. But every single time I start singing, you'll hear like the realness, right, of it all, and then going to the track. And just, it's just like, it burns me every single time. I was like, why wasn't I smart enough to do that? And then the last thing I will say about the movie is that there's this funny little thing at the end of Anytime. The boat is like going off into the sunset, right? And this, we're going down whatever canal in Miami. And if you look right before we get to that sunset moment, I put my hand down super quick and I close a door in the boat. And what happened was, is we were driving away and all of a sudden I looked down and there's like, you know, the little storage, a glove box for the boat. Inside was like a nasty old bag of Doritos and like, and I didn't know what the shot was, right? I didn't know what the frame was. So I quickly reached down and I just closed it and we're just driving away. And I'm like, I hope nobody sees the nasty Doritos. And it made the cut in there. So,
oh my God.
Little fun Easter eggs.
Oh, that's
I need
so
to go
fun.
Back and rewatch. That is, thank you for indulging us with,
yes, of
with
course.
Some stories from that movie. Now, yeah. I remember reading at the time of your Idol audition that you also were offered the opportunity to go into The Lion King on Broadway. So there was definitely like theater in your roots. I mean, obviously West Side Story, but did Broadway ever come knocking any time after Idol? Because there was a trend of American Idol contestants going into Broadway. Clay Aiken did Spamalot. Tamira yes. Gray went into Rent. So, because yes. American Idiot, was that your Broadway debut?
Mm-mm. No, we went on the verge of a nervous breakdown. So what happened was, is I went to University of the Arts for musical theater and for vocal performance. So musical theater has been in my blood for forever. A lot of people think, oh, you showed up on a reality TV show and then all of a sudden, right? But, and that's fine. But the truth is that I started out as a musical theater kid. I also started out as a kid who was like, I'm going to sing. Mm-hmm. And however that happens is however that happens. And it wasn't until that Ring of Keys moment in like fourth or fifth grade that I understood, oh, I can sing, dance, and act. Oh, and it just completely opened my mind up to everything that we know and love in our industry. And so I found myself at a fork in the road moment in 2002, because for years I had been auditioning for The Lion King, and it was still fresh at that point. We're talking about, you know, what, 2000, 99, 2000. And so I had been auditioning for it in school. I've been went up and done master classes. I was like literally at the point where they just had to say yes or no. And I think it was a little bit young, and they were like, we want you to be in the Broadway show. We just don't have the opening for you right now, but please wait, please wait, please wait. Years go by, right? And so we get to 2002, and I auditioned for this show nobody's ever heard of called American Idol. And they give me this yellow piece of paper and tell me I'm going to California. And I'm like, okay. And right, and they tell me it's a golden ticket, but it's a yellow piece of paper. Right? And so So I'm in the car waiting to go to my job, which at the time was working for a DJ company, a bar and bat mitzvah company. I was a dancer, party pumper. So if you've ever been to a bar and bat mitzvah and like the guys are like, come on, everybody, let's go. All that, like I was that guy. And I loved it. It's one of the greatest jobs I've ever had. And FYI, 13-year-olds are probably some of the most difficult audience I've ever had to be in front of. And yet it was the perfect time because I learned how to deal with 13-year-old children, especially moneyed 13-year-old children, right before I had to go with deal with 30 million viewers on live television. So it all worked out really well. I was in the car. And I'm sitting there and I realize I'm going to go to California for the first time in my life in about a week. And then wouldn't you know it, you know, that joke that we have like, oh, Broadway calling, uh-huh. Like literally Broadway called. And they were like, hey, this is Jay Bender's office. We finally have this role for you. We know you've been waiting. This is going to be your Broadway debut as a chorus member of the Broadway company of Lion King. And I was like, amazing. But there's this other project. I have to go out to California in a week. I might get cut. Can I call you back? And the only thing that made me not say yes was the fact that I just got up in front of Paula Abdul on TV and like, I did, you know, Forever My Girl. And like, I was like, there's something here. I've got to at least pursue it. And so they said, yes, call us back in a week. And so fast forward a week later, my time is up. I've got to call Broadway and tell them yes or no. They are offering me a job. I don't have an agent. They literally called me up and said, do you want to be on Broadway, kid? And I'm walking down the aisle at the Pasadena Civic Center in Pasadena, California. And I look up at the stage and I see the lights and the smoke and the cameras, the big jib and the big desk where Simon, Paula and Randy sat and so many of my contemporaries in the audience. And there's just something in the air. I don't know what it is, but I start bawling. And I was just like, you know, since I've had kids, right, like I've become a lot more soft-hearted and my wife and like all the things, right, getting older. But at 22 years of age, I was not a crier. And so here I am like trying to hide like my tears. I'm like, don't look at me. I don't know what's going on. What's wrong with me? And I recognize in the moment that up on that stage where I was been performing is the same stage that at the 50th anniversary of Motown, Michael Jackson performed for the first time the moonwalk in front of the world. And I was singing on that same stage. Stevie Wonder, so many of the amazing people who influenced me. I mean, not to mention all of the theatrical stuff that probably happened there as well. I was like, this is it. And there was a voice that said to me, just go with this. This is right. And it was that again. I mean, you know, I'm talking about another ring of keys moment, yeah. Right? It was one more key on the ring where I was just like, okay. And I listened and I yielded. And I called up Jay Bender's office and I said, thank you so very much. This has been a dream for me to do this. But I think I'm going to go for this other project. Thank you. But please keep me in mind for the future. I think the phone hung up before I got to the end of the word future. And no, I'm kidding. And so that was it. And then the rest is kind of history. But a beautiful bow on this story is 10 years later, you want to talk about Broadway calling. Yeah. 10 years later, I would be cast in my very first musical, Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, with an all-star theatrical cast.
And come on.
And we would hold our opening night party in the very same hotel, in the very same conference room, the Millennium Hotel in Times Square, where I sat and waited to audition for American Idol for my very first time.
Oh, again.
Yeah. Yeah, it was total full circle. I was like, wait a minute, this looks really fun. Oh my gosh. I sat in here waiting for my first audition for American Idol. That was the holding room for us. And yet here I am having my opening night party for my first Broadway show. So it was a full circle moment. And I've had so many cool moments like that in my career. And I just, it's part of the reason why I do it.
Oh my God. I live for stories like that, Justin. That is so Cool. What was your Broadway debut like? Was that a good experience?
I loved it. You know, it was a good experience. It was also a heartbreaking experience because it was a really great show that was put in front of the wrong audience. You had the Lincoln Center Theater audience, which tends to be older. And then you had this really super avant-garde show, Pedro Almodovar. It's like, if you watch the movie Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, you have no idea what's going on in the first 20 minutes. And especially now, you know, with an audience in general, I mean, don't even start about now. But even then, with an audience, especially an older audience, if you don't let them know what's going on in the first 20 minutes, they get confused, they hate it. And it doesn't matter, obviously, who you throw at it in terms mm-hmm. of personnel, because we had the who's who of Broadway.
Oh, my God.
And it still did not do well. So that part of it was heartbreaking. But to be cast in an all-star cast like that for my first show was an unbelievable honor. Patti LuPone gets to play my mom, and Brian Stokes Mitchell gets to play my dad, and Laura Benanti gets to play my love interest, and I get to watch Sherry Renee Scott work her fanny off, and just so many Danny Burstein, like, oh my God, like, so many people that are now, have been for a while, but are certainly now just at the top of their game. And yeah, and so that was awesome. And I learned proper theater etiquette from a lot of old school people. That was such a wonderful way to come in. And Patty took me under her wing, and she just said, she liked me. Thank God.
Thank God.
Right? Because you don't want to be on the wrong side of that fence. And so she was unbelievable as a mentor to me, as was Stokes. And they just taught me the proper etiquette of old school theater in terms of how to ask for things from other actors, how to really take care of your crew and your stage management, and how to really be a company leader. And I've taken those lessons and brought them to bear in all the other shows I've done.
Oh my God. Well, and you know, it's one of the David Yazbek scores as well, right? So
Yazbek, Jeffrey Lane. Oh my gosh. I mean, so amazing.
I'm glad Yazbek finally has his flowers, because it was like a string of just underappreciated.
It's genius. Well, you know, it's like a lot of geniuses' work, right? They'll do all this stuff, and then they'll either die, which fortunately David did not do, or they will have a hit, and then everybody's like, well, what else did they do? And they're like, oh, and then they uncover the catalog of genius stuff. Right. And that is exactly, I hope, is what's happening for David, because his catalog is stellar.
I'm hearing whispers of a Full Monty revival, and I think we should have Justin in that show.
Call me David.
So then you were Fiero in Wicked, too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, my yeah. God.
No, I've just been, it's been so interesting. I went from that to American Idiot. So I'm sorry, that being Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, to American Idiot. And that was going from the old school Tony Award winners, like who's who cast, into this young new school, like up and coming, amazing folks. And I got to work with Billy Joe, because he came in, Billy Joe Armstrong, lead singer of Green Day, because he came in to play St. Jimmy. And that was just, it was such a great experience, because I then learned kind of what was up with the kids. And I mean, look, I say kids, like I was still a kid myself, but like, it was so interesting to go from that old school mentality to the new school mentality. And instead of, you know, coming on and off the stage, on and off the stage, the character I played, Will, was on the couch on the stage. Yeah. I spent 90% of my time on the stage, on a couch, very purposefully, as a microcosm or sort of a representation of what his life was, being stuck in it. And so it was crazy. My wife was pregnant with our first child, and like, so many wonderful, wild moments happened there. And then I would go on to be Fiero in Wicked. It's like, again, I go to the machine, and then I learned how the machine works, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that is a machine, and they plug in different personnel to different parts. And, you know, I learned how to really make sure that I honored a role that had been very well established, and yet was able to insert like little pieces of me, right? Right. And sometimes I got my hand smacked for it, right? But like, it was so many wonderful things happened from that experience, for sure.
Now, I would be remiss to not ask you. Our friend Lacey absolutely has loved you forever. And she wanted us to ask you about your hair,
yeah.
which you had this like the iconic curly hair for so long.
It's still here.
There it is.
It looks crazy. Don't put up a screen.
I love it.
Please don't put up a screen grab of me looking crazy.
No.
Yeah, it's here for sure. Go for it.
Did Idol encourage you to keep your hair curly?
No.
No,
that was solely my choice. They didn't care. They were trying to make a TV show work that they had no idea would work. And they had sponsors to appeal to. And there was a little show called 24 that they were like, please, let's make this work. Right. Yeah. So they didn't care about any of that. It just worked. And I grew it out, and there's a lovely lady here in Pennsylvania where I am who was like, you know what we should do? We should break up that color. And I was like, what do you mean break up that color? And so she put little highlights in it, and then it just became this iconic thing. And I kept it for a long time, and then in sort of a rebellious, aka stupid moment, I decided to cut it because I wanted to cut ties with all of that nonsense. And yet, in my wiser years, I've recognized that that's an undeniable brand, and you know, it harkens back to certainly a better time than we're living through right now. And so I decided to grow it back, and so it's in full effect now.
One last question about American Idol, and then we will start to wrap up. But what would you, when you look back on that time?
Mm-hmm.
What is like the moment that stands out to you of that whole experience? I'm sure it was a whirlwind.
One moment. Yeah, no. The moments that really stand out to me were, it was really on tour. Being with Kelly and then being on tour, she is such a lovely human being. Like, the one thing I'll say about Kelly, I could say a million things, but the one thing I'll say is that when you watch her show, for example, you're not seeing the TV version of Kelly. You're seeing Kelly Clarkson. She is someone who has always maintained herself regardless of where she goes or what platform she's on. She shoots from the hip. She is so authentic. It's not even funny. And, with the exception of she says she loves to curse. Like, she doesn't curse on the show, but like she curses on Keller. But beyond that, I mean, she classes it up for the TV itself. But I loved being on tour. Being able to actually hear the scream of 30,000 fans, being able to see them and connect with them in that way was amazing. And being on a bus tour and going, I love to travel, going from city to city was just outstanding. And so the moment, another Ring of Keys moment for me, because I said, like, theater's in my blood, but also singing and performances in my blood. Mm-hmm. When I was about 8 years old, I was in the audience at the Atlanta Fulton County Stadium in Georgia, watching the Jackson 5 Victory Tour. This is in the early 80s or mid 80s. And so Michael Jackson was not Michael Jackson like we know him to be now or knew him to be, but he was in the ascendancy. He was very close to hitting that King of Pop zone that he was in for so long. And yet he decided to get back with his brothers and do this Jackson 5 tour, right? And everyone's older and they do all the hits and everything. And I was there in the audience, and the costumes, the music, the lights, the thump in the chest of the bass, the audience screaming. I, for no apparent reason, to no one in particular, said, I want to do that. And I pointed at the stage. And from there, I opened a loop and spent the next 20 some odd years, maybe 18 years, working to be able to do that thing. And it wasn't until just recently I realized that, oh my goodness, when I was standing on that stage on tour in 2002, in front of 30,000 screaming fans, I had become that person that 8-year-old me wanted to be. And I closed that loop. And hopefully, like we were talking about before, I opened that loop for someone else. Someone else looked at me or any of the other 9 people who came up to the stage and said, I want to do that. And right now, at this very moment, maybe they're working towards being that version of themselves. And that, again, means the more to me than any money, any screaming fans, any anything. And that's the legacy that will outlive me. Things I won't even know about. People I won't even know about. And they might not even remember me, but they'll remember a moment and they'll remember the way they felt. And they'll chase after that feeling until they find it. And then hopefully they'll inspire someone else to feel that way.
Amazing. You know, and I have to believe that everything does affect everything in that way. That's one of the reasons we love asking this Ring of Keys moment question, because I've had hundreds of Ring of Keys moments, you know, that have put me on different paths in all my different passions. So I have to believe that you did open the loop for someone else. Justin, I love how you're able to really put to words what you've learned from every single experience that you've had. It shows such great presence, you know, that you're able to stop in a moment or even like look back on it, I suppose, and just understand the way the way life has affected you and the way you're able to move forward through it. I think it's an admirable.
It's called age, honey. It's called age. Perspective and age.
Yes.
Thank you.
Oh my God. Well, you've had so much perspective. Oh yes. So before we wrap, we do like to end on a dose of drama. Maybe something to rant about, rave about, share with the listeners, promote, anything at all. Dylan, do you want to kick this off today?
I will. There was a recent news story that came out that George R.R. Martin is working on a stage adaptation of Game of Thrones. Justin, are you a Game of Thrones fan?
I'm a huge Game of Thrones fan, and
I'm hesitant about this stage production. We've seen epics go to stage before. The Lord of the Rings did it. It was a Toronto production, and then it was in the West End, or The Hobbit did it. Yeah. It was a huge financial flop, but it did regenerate interest in theater in the post 9/11 Toronto, and there was like a whole thing about that. But I mean, also like there was like some sort of a pandemic that happened in which it helped bring people back to the theater.
Heard of it.
Yeah.
May have heard of it.
Anyways, I'm hesitant. And you know, if only because we're waiting for the final book, George, and you're now going to adapt this series for the stage. We can wait for that. Give us the final book.
Yes.
That's my drama.
Give us the book.
Are you of the opinion, can I just throw a little snake in the room here? Are you of the opinion that they absolutely effed up that final episode?
Yeah.
They really did.
I am. I usually like to just, I'm such a positive person where I'm like, you know what, I'll find the good in everything. Like even with the ending of Lost and things like that, like I just accepted it for what it was. And with Game of Thrones, I was pretty disappointed in the last couple episodes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And then there was a news article that came out that said the writers had forgotten something. Oh, no. It was the bells, right? Because I remember that Daenerys is on the dragon. She hears the bells and all of a sudden she goes tickety boom and destroys the whole city. But they forgot that it was really Cersei who was the tickety boom over the bells because of the whole shame, that whole thing. Mm-hmm. So they had said, oh, Daenerys hears the bells and she loses it. But really it was a Cersei thing. Mm-hmm. And like, so maybe if they had gotten that right, it wouldn't have ended the way it ended, and
you're
she would have destroyed
something.
The city. Like, hello, folks. Like, come, you've you come this far. I mean, talk about dropping the ball right before the finish line. Which, look, no judgments. I am guilty of doing the same exact thing. But y'all, come on. There are too many people involved. Hey. But I mean, look, when you get up to that kind of level and there's that kind of pressure, I mean, I'm sure people are just like, let them do what they want to do.
I know. A true shame. It really did sour the audience's memory of Game of Thrones, too, because for years there, it was the television moment of the week for, you know, 10 weeks or however many episodes they did. But yeah, I want.
Yeah, maybe the stage adaptation will remind us that it was so wonderful. We'll see.
Maybe. Maybe.
Who knows? It'll come out in 10 years. So.
Oh, my God. Okay, so my dose of drama is, you know, I have recently been reading books. I know, your jaw's on the floor. You're like, oh, my God, he's finally reading books, because I really struggled with that through all 2020. I just couldn't focus on a book. You know, I was doing nothing but sitting at home, but I couldn't focus. And my drama is that books are amazing, and I think everyone should pick one up and read them. Read one. Seriously.
Get your library card. And, you know, you should also read Unshakable Confidence. This is perfect timing.
Thank you for that shameless plug there. My drama, when it comes to books, is a little bit like Connor's. At the very beginning of the pandemic, the people who run the book zone, aka the library, in our county. Sorry. Sorry, my brain. The library. The people who run the library were like, look, don't worry about bringing your books back. It's totally fine. No sweat. You just keep them. We'll take care of this after the pandemic. And then Like a month and a half ago, I get a letter in the mail telling me that I have a $160 book fine.
Oh my.
And I didn't get an email. I didn't get a regular mail, a telegram, a phone call, a carrier pigeon. I didn't get anything that told
smoke
me
signals.
That it was time. Smoke, nothing. I mean, I literally could throw, if I was a professional baseball player, I could throw a baseball and hit my library. And yet nobody told me anything. And so now the drama is that I've been like, y'all go to hell. It's gone to collections. It has gone to collections. And so now I've got to go fight the library board to be like, listen, you guys, this is ridiculous. It's $160. And I just haven't had the time to do it. But that's my book drama. So I'm a little soured on book. Game of Thrones and books, I'm a little soured on right now.
The Public Library versus Justin Guarini. It's coming soon. Ryan Murphy's going to produce it. It's going to be a whole
The
series.
Next American Crime Story.
That's it. That's it. And I will lose, of course.
Well, Justin, you are everything we'd hoped you'd be and more. This has been so much fun. The lessons you've taught us and just the stories you've shared, we're very, very thankful. You've been a part of our lives for so long, and so it's truly a treat to meet you.
For most of our lives, you've been a part of us.
Oh my God. I'm not old. You're old.
No, I mean, you're so young. Your next book needs to be about the secrets of keeping youthful.
You look ageless.
Yeah. Cheers. Thank you so very much. Thank you very much. Hi.
Oh my God.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And you know, as much maligned as from Justin Kelly has been and the ups and downs in my career, it's always wonderful to be a part of a wonderful podcast like this and a program that really just uplifts. And thank you for your kind words and just giving me a place to tell my stories and shine, because the more I do it, the more I realize, you know, the more I perform, it's like the same thing. It's like the more you perform, the more you get better at it, and the more you get more connected with yourself if you're really doing it the way you're supposed to do it, and the more you get connected with your stories and your message. And so thank you so much for giving me a place to shine, and I hope that you, the listener, has gained something from this, a bit of perspective. And the last thing that I will say is just remember, when it comes to having confidence, it really is all about learning how to trust yourself. There's so many things that have happened to us that make us feel like we can't trust ourselves. Bad decisions that we have made, bad decisions that other people have made for us, circumstances that seem completely out of our control, like just happenings and events, right? But at the end of the day, when you really begin to learn how to trust yourself, you'll see that the things that happen in life don't happen to you, they happen for you. And that's good and bad. You begin to learn that, oh, this thing that is traumatic that I would have fallen apart over just last week or last year, this isn't happening to me, this is happening for me. And I trust myself that I'm going to be able to learn the lesson here, and I'm going to grow, and I'm going to be bigger, and I'm going to be stronger as a result of this. And that is truly one of the foundational elements of confidence. And so that is what I wish for you.
I'm gagged.
Can't get any better than that. I need to write all that down. Thank you, Justin. That's wow. Everyone should follow you at Justin Guarini. Wherever you find Justin, you need to check out Unshakable Confidence. Yeah. Remind everyone what the website is where they can get the ebook.
Yes, it's Core Confidence Coaching. Unshakable Confidence Coaching was, unshakableconfidence.com was taken. So I have to do Core Confidence Coaching.com.
Love it. And of course, everyone should be following us, if you're not already, at The Drama Podcast, me at Dylan McDowell, Connor at Connor McDowell. And Connor, we will see you next time.
Drama!